everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a big show for you this morning. Tom Brady is talking about Dez Bryant. Russell Wilson is talking about how good his team can be this year. And Odell Beckham Jr. is a very happy man this morning. That's where we begin with the long-awaited and the much-anticipated contract extension. The one that now makes Odell Beckham Jr. the highest paid wide receiver in the history of the NFL. The Giants announced a 5-year deal worth up to $95 million. He now has $65 million guaranteed. How did Odell take the news? Just like that. Here's Odell celebrating with his teammates shortly after the contract was finalized and announced, and after a quiet preseason, Odell not so quiet in his celebration, well deserved. He will now start the season knowing he will be a New York Giant for a long time. So, CC, I will kick off this conversation with you. What are expectations now for the Giants wide receiver? Now that he's in camp, starting the season, has his money, and everything should be set.
Well, typically teams, especially in a hard salary cap system, the way the NFL does, when you are paying that type of money to one player, what you're looking for is not change expectations on the field. There's a few things I know Odell, in conversating with him, that he's going to try to get better at as a football player. He still believes that he has not hit his peak performance. I agree with him. I do believe there's some areas he can get better. But off the field, and from a locker room leadership standpoint, it becomes important. You showed that video. If that guy right there is not a team leader for you, your organization is the future is not going to be bright, and you're going to have a lot of problems. When you make that type of capital investment into that player, you're expecting a certain type of leadership. You're expecting a certain type of conduct on and off the field. So that's the only place that his expectations should change. On the field, we should expect him to have 1,300 to 1,400 yards, 10 touchdowns, because that's what he's done over the average of his first 4 years. So on the field, there's a few little things. As far as his overall concentration, 2016, too many drops. Last year at the beginning of the season, too many easy drops compared to the complicated. And also, I believe that he'll get physically faster as he gets older, as he goes through his 20s, as he gets closer to 28, 29. I believe he'll be a lot faster athlete and able to play football at a faster level than what we've seen so far.
Before I give my answer, that last thing you said, I think it would confuse some people, and it struck me as interesting. I know you had your fastest 40 time, you believe, in your early 30s, certainly than you had in coming out of college. But I thought that was more of an outlier. Why do you think he'll get faster?
If you look at the world record, if you look at the greatest sprinters in the world, their fastest times are in their late 20s. So the way Odell has been training, he will get faster and his body will physically get stronger. This is the strongest we've seen him. He's stronger, I'm talking about as far as physically stronger, and he's faster than when he came into the league. The physical body matures, and for men, we go through 3 maturity phases when we're in our 20s. So he's going to get physically better. So I expect to see that, and I expect it to play out in how he plays the game.
On that note, a great cover story by Seth Wickersham in ESPN, the magazine. Actually, it dropped yesterday right as this news was coming out. And it talked about how, if people don't know Odell's background, both of his biological parents were collegiate athletes, and his stepfather is a gold medalist in track and field. So he has kind of 3 branches of athleticism growing up. And this summer, while he was working out, they realized that in his sprints, he was faster in his second 10 yards or his third 10 yards than his first 10 yards. And that might be somewhat typical, but the discrepancy wasn't as typical. So to Chris's point, he worked on that. He did some hill training, did different training to where they think already he potentially could be faster this year than we've seen him. As far as what you expect from Odell Beckham, I'm going to echo what Chris said on this point. On the field, continue to be Odell Beckham. That doesn't mean you can't get better. Everyone can get better, at least in certain things and everything they do. But, I mean, I say it all the time. We can graphically show you nobody has ever produced more through this part of their career. First 47 games, he's got the most catches, the second most yards, tied for 5th in touchdowns, and the most 100-yard games. Like, you couldn't be more productive through essentially your opening 50 games than Odell has been. So, yes, obviously, you don't want to have another season-ending injury, but you can't prevent, like, that was a fluke last year with a player landing on his ankle. It's everything else. It's what Coach Mangini talks about and preaches about, which is there's multiple ways to send a message to your team. One of them is who you choose to pay and what that represents. That joy we saw there is a joy he has to play with. Again, to go back to that article that came out yesterday, it talked about how the least productive games of Odell's career have been after a coach or a teammate has told him to tone it down, and he's played almost morose, and that is not the Odell Beckham Jr. that is producing those numbers.
Well, in moving forward, because people are going to say stuff to him, teammates are going to challenge him, he's set himself up for failure if he feels like that's the only way that he can play. There is no one humanly possible to can every NFL Sunday can say, I'm going to get up and I'm going to play like that. I played 16 years in the league and it's impossible. You know, there are sometimes you eat a bad meal before the game. There are sometimes you have issues off the field that trickle into what your emotions are. Now, it's been a problem for him.
Yes.
It's how do I manage it as I go forward? It's like I try to tell you guys, some days I come into the office, most days, 9 out of 10, I'm going to be chipper. But on that 10th day, it's not that I'm in a bad mood. It's that I have to focus on what I'm doing. Right. I can't be a cheerleader today. To get the best out of my performance, so Odell is going to have to learn that. How do I grind out good
games
compared to being a high flyer all the time?
Just quickly, and I apologize, Jenna, that's exactly the point that I was going to make, is that he, now that you are paid at this level, now that you have, as far as the Giants have done everything they can do for you, they've stuck with a veteran quarterback, they've drafted another weapon, they have now paid you accordingly. Now it's your job, no matter your mood, demeanor, disposition, going on off the field, to be that guy day in, day out. And that is what being a true professional is, that on your worst days, personally, you can't, it doesn't show through your performance, which is why I brought up how in the past that has been an issue for him. That's something that he can improve on.
No, but and echoing what you're both saying, there has to be a balance between the money is being paid, what the expectations are of Odell, and not veering too far from who he is and what made him who he is. He's a fiery guy. He's got a very spirited personality. Sometimes that manifests itself in things that we don't necessarily love to see in his behavior and his demeanor, both on and off the field. But that's who he is. And yet at the same time, what you said, CeCe, being paid this much money means there's a certain on and off field conduct that you have to adhere to if you want to be and need to be and are expected to be now this high paid team leader face of the franchise.
Yeah, as you saw, even in the locker room, he's got some guys following him. I try to tell guys that it's a chance to, when you're a leader, it's a chance to lead for the right. It's a chance to lead for the bad, you know, for the wrong. So with Odell, he has tremendous influence in that locker room. Guys really love him. But as you grow older, their tolerance for less immature things, it just won't be there. So I'm not changing my expectations for him. The conversations we've had the last couple years have been exactly the same thing I talked about today. So for me, it's not based on because he got paid. Even if the Giants had not come to this resolution and paid Odell, my goals for him for the 2018 season would still be the same. Like, they wouldn't change. Like, you can't change your goals and everything for other people. And I just think it becomes very, very important at this stage that he becomes just very consistent in who he is, what his brand is, and the type of football he's going to
play. We hear the word leader thrown out a lot. Explain to the audience, aside from leading by example on the field, meaning by being a great player, what leadership in an NFL locker room from a non-quarterback, non-head coach position is. How Odell can be a leader like you're talking about. Explain what that means.
Yeah, continue to work hard. Is that there's no one on the Giants that works harder than Odell. So he has the eyeballs of his teammates on him. There's no one on the Giants spending more money on their body, so their body might perform. All right, he's trying to eat the right things. He's trying to put it all together. So what you do has to line up with what you say. And sometimes with him, because of he loves the attention. Like, I mean, he loves to be part of the limelight. How in moving forward does he with this newfound riches, how does he have fun and not be on a red carpet or something? Those are going to be challenges moving forward, that every time that he has a good time, right, that he has to be out amongst the people, and that's going to be something he's going to have to manage and figure out.
Allow me to ask one more question on this, because you obviously have some very unique insight on this. Not just forget the wide receiver position, just pro athlete who has received a big contract. What are the potential, like, human negatives or the blowback, if you will, for the days, the weeks, the months after the whole world knows you just got this type of money?
Yeah, but the thing about it, Nick, there's 10 guys in the NFL, wide receivers, that are getting $15 to $16 million. You guys act like we paid him $30 million. No, he got what he was supposed to get. You know who did him a favor? Houston, when they signed
DeAndre.
Nuke. Tampa, when they signed Evans. Kansas City gave Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
I mean,
Los Angeles and Brandon Cooks.
Brandon Cooks, $16 million.
Yep. Right.
His homeboy,
Jarvis Landry,
got $16 million from the Browns. So why should we weren't breaking them down,
right,
when they got their money. So why should we be trying to do the same thing for Odell? Like, just be careful in making sure, because life is about, a lot of times, what are your expectations? And when people have unrealistic expectations, they set themselves up for a failure. I expect the Giants, they had to pay him. They had to keep this superstar in New York. It was the best thing for him. And I'm looking forward to seeing him play football that we missed out on last year. I'm looking forward to breaking down routes. Not talking about, did he go on the Love Boat? Oh, did he change because he got the money? No, this is just a version that we've always seen.
And that's just it, is now we can move forward and finally start talking about what Odell can actually do for what some would call a flawed Giants team that does have a lot of holes in it. We'll talk a lot more about that. We do have Eric Mangini joining us. But again, Odell Beckham Jr. got paid his money. Coming up, Tom Brady is hanging up on his radio interview yet again. We'll tell you why next on First Things First.
Football is about to make its long-anticipated return to living rooms all across America. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitment. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So, if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play, because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free team pick'em promo. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use code FIRST. All you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly and you'll win a share of $1 million. That's code FIRST, F-I-R-S-T, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em for details.
Moving on to Tom Brady. Much of the rumored headbutting with Bill Belichick stems from the treatment of Brady's somewhat controversial trainer, Alex Guerrero. So when Guerrero flew on the Patriots team plane to their week 3 preseason game, it left some wondering if fences had been mended. Brady was asked about his relationship with Guerrero during his weekly radio interview with Boston radio station WEEI. Let's just say that didn't go well. Take a listen.
So what changed in him not being on the team plane last year and this year? Was that just communication back and forth, or was that an understanding of other things? What led to that being able to happen this year?
You know, I'm not getting into all that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, when I ran into him at the Super Bowl last year in Minneapolis, I remember talking to you about it at the time. When I talked to him there, he had said in his opinion that all this stuff had been overblown, that he and Belichick actually had a pretty good relationship even then. Would you say that was true?
I said I don't want to get into it.
Okay. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows, it's well documented how, you know, the work that he and I do together.
No, I know. I understand that. I'm just trying to figure out, because I saw the reports this weekend that he's traveling with the team. Was he on the sideline on Friday?
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a great day. I'll talk to you later.
Nothing if not tenacious. Just keep asking and asking until you get either the answer you want or until Tom Brady hangs up on you. CC, what was your reaction to this?
It's not good for WEEI, you know, as far as, because Tom does a couple of these interviews, and he's done them through the years. WEEI is one that he does, and he also does one on Monday Night Football. And for a guy who's a superstar, he doesn't say a lot, but sometime he does give us something. And that's really our only entry into Tom Brady. So as a aging superstar, when Tom decides to hang up the game, this would be one of the reasons why. Because of asking questions like this on a daily basis. And he gave them ample time. He said, I'm not going to discuss it. They came back at him again. You have to realize, when you're in sports and you're talking to athletes, this is not a beat writer. This is not, you're not sitting at his locker.
Right.
Like, you are on the phone. He's agreed. He's under contract to do these interviews. So you guys are in a partnership. You know, this is not like you're just covering the team. You're out there just doing your job and you're just trying to be a good journalist, be a good reporter and ask a tough question. No, this is someone that you've partnered with. Now you've jeopardized that partnership, because if you wanted to hear Tom Brady, you had to go to their radio station for a long, long time. Now, as far as Tom, had he been answering enough questions, given the organization, Tom shouldn't be answering questions. He shouldn't open that door, because just like everyone has drawn the conclusion, Tom and Belichick don't get along because of what happened to Guerrero. So if he could eliminate that, I could understand why Tom would be frustrated, and I could understand why he would dismiss the phone call and get off the phone.
From the radio station perspective, because when C says Monday Night Football, it's the Westwood One radio broadcast where he does that interview, and it's with Jim Gray every time, and he and Jim Gray obviously have a good relationship. Some of the better interviews I've seen with Brady have been done by Jim Gray in the offseason at some events where you actually get real insight, like, He has trust with Jim Gray. That I don't know why. I'm glad Brady continues to do these EEI interviews, because we, like you said, it gives us ability to sometimes get some real insight, some information if he wants to put it out there. But it can't be enough money to make a difference to him. And keep in mind, this is also the radio station that last year he cut these interviews off with, because one of the hosts had, he thought, insulted one of his kids. The host did insult one of his kids. I don't think he meant it as badly as it sounded, but Brady cut it off there, and a radio station that has a, let's call it, a tortured relationship with some of the teams in town because some of the inflammatory, if not racist, things their hosts have said, some of whom are on that show. It's an odd association that Brady has, and I do think that if the first time you're asked about Guerrero, you hang up the phone, you're being petty. I think that if it's at, like you said, a press conference, then, hey, man, as long as you're up there, they can ask you whatever they want, like whatever they're told to ask. But this is not a typical interview, because, like, you, partner is the important word there. Like, when you have a business relationship with a team or an individual, I mean, I did an interview like this once, weekly, with Matt Schaub in Houston, and I asked him at one point if he thought he should be benched. And that was the last time we ever did that interview. He severed the partnership. Like, some people can say that's on me, whatever it is. Like, it is not, if he was asked that.
Do you regret asking the question?
I don't regret asking the question, because he was benched a couple weeks later. It was something everyone was wondering, and I thought it was a noteworthy question, and I thought it was a fair question.
What athlete is going to say, bench me? Yeah, you know something? Well, I stink. Bench me.
We don't have to litigate my Matt Schaub thing from five years ago.
But I'm sure you learned something from that. It's not a matter of being right or wrong. It's a matter, do I learn? How do I get information? How do I continue to push the product? And if the guy's not going to talk, it didn't work for you. So regardless of the question, like, it did not work.
Clearly, though, there's a bigger issue than his relationship with the radio station. People are curious about his relationship with Guerrero. Can you read into anything, if you take the relationship with the radio station, can you read into anything else from that?
The fact that
Guerrero was on the team playing, that there is maybe a rumor that he might have been on the sideline for that game.
I can take something. Maybe we don't know what we think we know about the Patriots, which I continue to try to tell people. We're not going to be able to figure them out. Belichick and Brady have a good relationship. I keep going over this and keep saying it. Like, Tom Brady and his ability to have a person he thinks important with him having some type of conflict with the organization is not new to sports. It's not just because it's Tom Brady. It's not because the guy's practices are somewhat questionable in the past. No, it's because they're running a business. And Guerrero is not the New England Patriots business. It's Tom Brady's business. And sometimes they just don't match up. But it's obvious that New England feels like it's important that the best player that we have has a guy who he thinks important, and they have allowed him to be on the plane.
Yeah, that's the noteworthy part, is there is either a thawing or something has
changed from last year, because last year he wasn't allowed
I thought the relationship was going to go worse, not better, in the offseason after Edelman gets suspended.
Right. How do we know that he didn't just stop flying on the plane? How do we know he wasn't allowed to be on the plane anymore?
No, that's a legitimate question.
That's a good point. We don't know, but we're discussing it as a topic. But you're right, we don't know. That could have changed, but something did change.
And so the idea that Guerrero was not on the plane last year due to his own choices was not something, if I'm being totally honest, I had considered. So, like, you're right, that is a possibility. I would say it's an unlikely possibility, but it is a possibility. It looks to me like something relationship-wise changed it in a positive way. That's what those guys were trying to get at. It's probably why they thought it wasn't going to piss Brady off it wasn't going to make Brady mad, because they thought, listen, I'm setting him up to say, yeah, Guerrero and Belichick are better.
But if you start the interview thinking I'm going to ask him a question, maybe it's not going to make him mad. When he says I don't want to talk about it, the two follow-up questions after that are totally out of bounds if he's a real partner. All right? He's not just Tom Brady, some football player. You just came into the locker room and trying to get a soundbite for your radio show. You're in a partnership with him, and that should be paramount in every interview. You have one of the greatest players ever on your radio station. The object is to keep him on there, not to shorten the interview.
All right, we're going to take a break there. Coming up on the other side, why should Cowboys fans be worried about this upcoming season? That is next on First Things First. Welcome back. Time for us to go viral. Check out this picture the Giants tweeted out of OBJ signing that big deal. In honor of the new contract, Odell's good friends Jarvis Landry posted this throwback of these two close friends back in the day with the caption, "Everything we spoke into existence started back when."
That's freshman year at LSU. That's really cool.
Great, man. They've been great friends for a long, long time. It's very, very rare you're able to see that, guys who grow up together, play college together, play the same position.
And both of them make it huge.
Yes.
Little did Jarvis know that Odell was not only going to pass him in money, but in tattoos by a wide margin.
Also in hair length, color, texture,
Oh, no. That
style.
Guy's, no, that dude has changed now.
Odell?
What?
I mean,
look at that.
I didn't recognize him, if I'm being honest.
Yes.
For those two guys, like you said, same position, to both make it at this level and to now be two of the five.
And both of them,
paid.
Two of the hardest workers in the NFL, from a receiver working on routes, hands trying to perfect the white, both of them, they get it done.
You know, you talked about hard working. There was a great part at the end of that article that you were making reference to earlier where they were asking head coach Pat Shurmur, you know, how hard is he? And he turned around in his chair and he goes, look outside. Practice has been over for like an hour. Look who's left out there. And it was Odell and Eli just throwing the ball to each other. I mean, right. Just to show you, to your point, how hard he does indeed work. All right, let's move on. Time for some stories now to start your morning. Alabama kicks off on Saturday, and Nick Saban still being a little coy about his quarterback situation. Saban said nothing has been decided about the Crimson Tide starting QBs, or in other words, coy. CC, who do you think starts for Bama versus Louisville?
Well, first things first. Okay. Nick Saban, lying.
Lying.
just straight lying right now. Wherever he is, in Tuscaloosa, he's lying.
Lies.
Just a pack of lies. There ain't no way that Nick Saban has determined every starter on that team knows who they are. Now, I do believe both quarterbacks will play and play a lot, and that's how you try to resolve the situation. But Tua will be in there. Number 13 going to be in there throwing it because he makes them a more explosive offensive team.
And at this point, the ship has sailed on Jalen Hurts. If he was going to transfer, he's not transferring, like, at this moment. So you could be honest now.
No, you can't, Nick. The reason why, because he's going to be in this situation again recruiting. So other quarterbacks and their families are looking at this. Oh, no, this is going to play out like this affects Alabama and how they go forward. Watch what they say after the game. Both players will play, though.
All right, to the Chiefs now. Eric Berry is trying to come back from a torn Achilles he suffered last season. Chiefs GM Brett Veach says Berry doesn't beat expectations. He destroys them. Nick, what do you expect from Eric Berry this season?
Exactly that. This guy is as good of a comeback player as we've ever seen in the league.
Yes.
He blew his ACL as a young player. What did he come back and do? All pro. He got cancer. What did he come back and do? All pro. And now a blown Achilles that he suffered in a week one game against the Patriots, a game he was dominating as the safety almost turned linebacker in that game. If anyone can do it, it's Eric Berry, one of the best people in the NFL.
And Nick, he's one of my favorite players. We've also been training him since he left University of Tennessee. So I have an existing relationship with him. I have to be all disclosure on that. But there's no one who works harder and works harder at the small things to get better. He could actually play corner. He can play in the box safety. He can play free safety. One of the great players that we do have. We give out an award. Every team gives out called the Ed Block Courage Award. Every year it should go to a player like Eric Berry. I expect great things because I know how much hard work he's put into the game.
Good stuff. All right, finally, Khalil Mack continues his holdout from the Raiders. Head coach John Gruden said he didn't want to put a timetable on when Mack could return and described the holdout as a grueling process. Chris, what was your reaction to Gruden's comments?
Disingenuous. The reason why, because he hadn't talked to him. It's so grueling. You know something? You haven't even picked up the phone, John. Like, you haven't been gone from the game that long that you don't understand that. Yeah, I don't understand a coach like Gruden, why they wouldn't be in communication, especially you're just now coming back. Like, what type of message are you sending the rest of the team? So you tell them, hey, man, have you talked to Khalil Mack? Because I know guys on the team, they're talking to him. The head coach? No, he hadn't talked to him. Is it important to you? Because I know Gruden, if it was important to him, he would talk to him. Because the things that are important to people, they make it a priority to make sure that they get done.
And it should be, Gruden has said he has attempted to reach out to him at least once. But, hey, man.
Wait.
No, I understand. I just want the audio. I just want it because I know what they're saying. Oh, he did try. Okay, so you tried to call the guy once or twice. He's the best player
on your twice,
team.
He hung up.
Right. Oh,
hello?
You missed my call. I'm in a
He'd
tunnel
like
now.
He'd like to make a call.
Listen. Grueling. They haven't reported. I read yesterday that the Raiders have not made Khalil Mack an offer since February. What this is one of. Listen, I am more easily surprised on this stuff than you, but this one has to surprise even you. That the Raiders and Khalil Mack, if we were to say, all right, which of these star players from this 2013 draft were going to have some major contract issue that was potentially going to get ugly, Mack might have been last on the list. His value is the most easily defined. He's been the healthiest. He's never missed a time due to a previous holdout. And he's got no off-the-field issues whatsoever. And let me add one other thing. His team needs him more than any of the other guys because they have no other good defensive players or elite defensive players.
So explain it to me.
I can't.
Let's go from 30,000 feet, the look you like to take. Here's Gruden coming in. He wants this season to start off on the right. I mean, get himself a couple of wins under his belt. Let him get off on the right foot. If they haven't made an offer at this point or have had any conversations at this point, should we just assume they don't want him on the team? I mean, what are they waiting for?
It's not a matter of not wanting him on the team. They don't want that salary. And it's like a couple that shopping in suburbia, they're trying to buy a house. Mm-hmm. And, man, based on their income, they got the salary to be able to get the house. But there's a thing called a down payment. That initial stroke. Can you handle that stroke? Your apartment shopping in New York, can you handle that first and last? And that mug will hurt you, okay? As far as this, that guarantee we saw OBJ, the type of guarantees, Khalil Mack would be in the same ballpark.
Can you write a check for $40 million today?
Now they own the NFL team, but they ain't got the cash like that. So the reason why Gruden hadn't talked to him, he's not being honest, is because he can't guarantee the kid he's going to be playing in Oakland. Because since Gruden was hired, I can guarantee you they have had discussions of we're going to trade the asset. And that's the reason why Gruden can't develop a relationship with him, because He can't be honest with the guy to tell him you're definitely going to be an Oakland Raider for the next 4 or 5 years.
Listen, I'm skeptical of John Gruden, this iteration of him as a head coach. But this one isn't on him. The head coach would obviously like Khalil Mack there. It is on him that he's being disingenuous, to use your word. That he is not being honest about what this process has been. But how important is Khalil Mack to the Raiders? In the last 2 years, he has 21 and a half sacks. The rest of the team as a whole has 34 sacks. Like, without him...
him getting double teamed.
Over the last...
The rest of them getting single blocked.
Everyone's getting single blocked. Over the last 2 years, only the Jets have fewer sacks than the Raiders. And the Raiders have Khalil Mack. So, like, you've got one of the best sack artists in the league. Your team's been the second worst at sacking the quarterback. That's how valuable this guy is. But if you ain't got it, you ain't got it. And I can't believe we're saying this with a pro football team, but it would appear they ain't got it, crazy.
I haven't seen a topic fire you up so every morning, Khalil Mack. I can't believe it. I don't like
illogical things. I get a weird feeling about them. I can't handle them. And this is naturally illogical, and it just really bothers me.
Yeah, I like the weird feeling, though, compared to you being weird.
Okay.
Cool. So it's just a feeling.
Better.
Enough.
All right, let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys and their lukewarm preseason. On Sunday, they lost to the Cardinals. Now, neither Dak Prescott nor Ezekiel Elliott played, and it showed. They turned the ball over eight times in a 27-3 loss. Some say the preseason doesn't matter, that all will be okay come the regular season. Others, like our friend Mark Schlereth, vehemently disagree.
I think they need to be very concerned. We used to have this saying when Shannon and I played, is they don't count, but they do matter. It matters how you establish yourself. It matters how you go out there. Right. How you go out there and handle your business. I don't believe in that. Hey, we're just going to flip the switch come, the first week of the season. We're going to be okay. You've got your starting offensive line. Smith has chronic back issues. Mm-hmm. Travis Frederick, Guillain-Barré syndrome. Mm-hmm. I mean, he may never play this year. I mean, and you never know how that's going to affect him long term. Zach Martin has a knee injury, mm-hmm. says he's going to be back for week one. We don't know who your established receiving core is. There are so many things that scare me about the way they've handled this preseason. If you're a Cowboy fan, you should be nervous.
What do you think, C? Is Schlereth right? Should Cowboy fans be nervous starting this season?
Well, the thing about the Cowboys is, what's happened since training camp, to me, would have made them nervous. I was already I was nervous about their wide receiver group. Are they going to be good enough that Dallas can get to double-digit in wins? But that offensive line, man, that is real. Tyron Smith does have a chronic back. He's practicing now, but it's given him problems the last couple years.
For an offensive lineman, I know you're going to go through it, but on Tyron Smith, if you're going to have a chronic blank injury, is back the worst for an offensive lineman? Chronic knee, chronic shoulder, chronic ankle.
I just think as far as doing your job, at that position, the squatting that you do, you're always going to have bad knees. The shoulders, the amount of reps you're extending yourself, punching, you're going to have bad shoulders. And all that impact, like you are sitting bracing yourself to take on a guy 250 to 300 pounds. It's a lot of pressure on your body. None of them are good, but it's hampered him because bad backs lead to hamstring problems and other lower extremity problems. So none of them are good. It's just something we must continue to watch to see if he ever gets that behind him. Like, will he be able to practice on a regular basis? Because that's very, very important of how good he is.
Go ahead. And you were going through, you're going to go down the line. Zach Martin, Travis Frederick.
I mean, these are not just ordinary offensive linemen. I'm concerned about Minnesota and the injuries they have on the offensive line. And those are ordinary offensive linemen. These are great offensive linemen on a team that is led by the running attack, and they need them to play great. On their depth chart right now, they got Travis Frederick. Now, when I heard Stink's comments, I thought he was just talking about Travis Frederick. I'm not nervous about the Cowboys and what I've seen this preseason. 8 turnovers. Most of those guys touching the ball, they're not going to be handling the ball. If it was Zeke fumbling, Terrence Williams fumbling, guys like that, Cole Beasley cutting the rap tape, and he was fumbling, I would be concerned. I'm not concerned about that, but I am concerned about Travis Frederick and his overall, what is his diagnosis? When will he be back? Because I think he is probably the most important lineman that they have. Not just because he calls the signals, not because he calls the defense, because his overall athleticism and how in the run game and in the screen game he can get on the perimeter.
And you interrupted yourself, but I think what you're going to say is you're looking at their depth chart.
Yes.
You see Travis Frederick is now third team.
Oh, yeah, because they know the reality of it. And in conversations with Stink and just listening and getting more information about what he's going through, man, this is a scary, scary situation. So if I was just talking about Travis alone, I would be nervous about the Cowboys in 2018.
CeCe mentioned the running tech. Besides Ezekiel Elliott, what obviously they're going to do with him, what do you think the Cowboys are going to be best at this season?
Oh, it's gonna, if they're going to have any shot, it's going to be their front seven defensively. Like, if we're talking about the Cowboys as a good team after Zeke, it's going to be, oh, they get after the quarterback.
Yes.
They tackle well in space. That the yards after catch by running backs and tight ends against the Cowboys are some of the lowest in the league because they got Sean Lee and Jalen Smith running all over the field. Randy Gregory looks like the guy who could have been a top 10 pick coming out of college.
You saw him flash this weekend?
Absolutely right.
Now, when Nick says this guy, Randy Gregory, reinstated, I talked about my relationship with him, trying to help him get through rehab, ultimately seeing how hard he wanted this, writing a letter for the National Football League in his reinstatement. So he is doing tremendous. They got at least four guys that can come off the edge and put elite pressure on the offense.
And when I say he was going to be a top 10 pick, that's not hyperbole. Like,
no.
That is,
he was a second round pick with multiple drug infractions coming out of college.
Right. So that's all the math you need. Usually a player with his drug profile out of college,
yes,
is off the board of teams or a third day, end of the day. Like, I know Burfict's issue was not drugs, but it was that type of, okay, so he was going to be this, a first-round pick, but now he's a seventh-rounder undrafted. He was such a talent that even with all those red flags, he still went second round.
Yes.
With as many as far as street drug red flags as you can have, and it turned out, unfortunately, those red flags were warranted. But here is, when C talks about Tyron Smith's chronic back, but even let's just say he's healthy. Zach Martin has a knee injury. Travis Frederick has a scary syndrome. Just think about the percentage of their cap dedicated to those players.
Mm.
Like, it's not just your best players. It's the reason you don't have wide receivers is because you decided we're spending our money on these guys. Like, that's a devastating situation where a few years ago, Jadeveon Clowney, he had microfracture surgery, and Houston loses him for a year. But at least he wasn't a big, like, he was a big part of their plan, but he was cheap. He was on his rookie deal. So it's not like this is, 8% of our salary cap is on the shelf for the year. The highest paid center in the league, we don't know when he's coming back. The highest paid guard in the league is coming into the season with a knee injury. And the highest paid tackler, one of the highest paid tackles in the league, had injuries all throughout last year.
And it will affect the quarterback.
Sure.
Because in this third year, because you hear what they're saying out of Dallas. Dak's going to be better in his third year. Like, we got this offense geared around him. Zeke's going to be better. Off-season training.
Friendly
no
offense.
No injury. Okay, but when the quarterback has to get involved in the line calls, in the protection calls, and the offensive line is not as good, the protection tends to seep a little more. He's got to make more decisions, and it's going to be more pressure put on his plate, those injuries. Everyone that says, don't put more pressure on yourself, it's impossible. In year number three, that quarterback and the pressure those fans have, you should be worried about the quarterback. Those injuries, because it will affect the quarterback.
And they're now financially hamstrung to go out and do anything else.
Absolutely.
Too much to shore up the line. All right, take a break. Coming up, can Russell Wilson lead the Seahawks back into the playoffs? He seems to think so. That's next. Some first things first. Welcome back to First Things First. Former head coach Eric Mangini joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, brother.
Nice to see you, coach. You know, it's been a pretty good preseason for Russell Wilson and Seattle. That after a pretty bad last season for Seattle, one in which they missed the playoffs. This year, even after parting ways with several veteran players, Wilson feels great about the 2018 season. His line has given him time to throw, and as a result, Wilson says he thinks the team, as constructed, is ready. All right, Coach, what has to go right for the Seahawks for this team to make the playoffs this year?
One of the things that Pete talked about in the offseason is the importance of being able to run the ball. And then that's something that they feel like they really haven't been able to do effectively recently. So there's a commitment to trying to run the ball on a consistent basis in an effective way, in a way that allows now Russell Wilson to do all the things that he does, but do them better because they really have to deal with the running game as an issue. He talked about playing good defense. I think they'll be able to play good defense. Is it going to be what we're used to? Maybe not, because they've had people move on. But look, everybody has people move on. And when we talk about teams and the good teams and the good organizations, is they're able to overcome the losses of some of their marquee players. They have Russell Wilson and they have Pete Carroll, and just like you have Tom Brady and you have Bill Belichick, you'd like to think that as long as you have the core pieces in place, you should be able to move forward. Brian Schottenheimer is a guy that was my offensive coordinator in New York. I think he's a bright guy. It's going to be interesting, though, to see how his system fits with Russell Wilson's style. That to me is something that to watch as we go forward.
So you mentioned that Pete Carroll said they want to run the football. I think a guy who's been banged up in camp with a hand injury, but they expect to be back for week one, could be critical in Rashad Penny. They spent a first-round pick on a running back out of San Diego State. Chris Carson is their other option there, and right now he's the starter. Because after Doug Baldwin, you have a lot of questions on the receiving core, right? And Doug Baldwin, by the way, has been dinged up, but they expect him to be fine.
Yeah, he's been out since the first week of training camp. But they missed a lot of time.
I mean, I want people to know they don't expect him to miss a protracted time into the season. But we also see guys that miss training camp, either due to holdout or injury. Soft tissue injuries can bite them early. They're not fully ready to go early. Mm-hmm. So as good, and I think Russell Wilson's one of the five best quarterbacks alive. I think he's great. And I do think you got your coach, you got your quarterback, you got 60% of what you need for a good football team, but that other 40% matters. And so mention the running game. The other thing, if we're going to talk Seahawks in the playoffs, I think they need to find a way to get Earl Thomas there. Like, Earl Thomas right now would be the best player, or him or Bobby Wagner, you could take your pick. He would, at worst, be their second best player on their defense, and far and away, their best secondary player. Now that Cam Chancellor's gone and Richard Sherman's gone, he might have been the best even with those guys there. I think if you don't have Earl Thomas, I don't know how good the defense can be, and I worry about the weapons offensively. I think even as good as Russell is, the playoffs this year in the NFC for the Seahawks is a tough putt in my eyes.
Yeah, based on how many good teams we have in the NFC, that's to me the reason why I believe that their flaws can be exploited far more, because if you look at the defensive fronts, one of their weakest units happens to be their offensive line. They think they're getting better. Now, they're moving off of Jimmy Graham, who's in Green Bay, and they have another tight end, and all the other tight ends are better blockers than Jimmy Graham. So if they are going to run the ball, having a tight end will help it. Now, what I see happen a lot in the NFL, every team has a philosophy for what they're going to do in the coming season. Seattle wants to run the ball. You get halfway through about week number one or week number two, that running game is not clicking, man, they're going to start chucking it. Russ is going to start making plays. So I believe the relationship that Brian Schottenheimer has there with Pete Carroll, that they can stay on task, because this offensive line, if they want to be able to get better, they got to allow them to be physical. You can't allow Russell to drop back, have him scramble, and he's gotten nicked in trying to do that. He's been a superstar on a team. See, I believe because they have home field advantage, they're going to be 7-1 in that place at the worst. Their problem is on the road. Because if they can just be a 500 team, coach,
11 wins get you in every time.
That's all they got to do. I believe they're going to win 7 games at home. Now, on the road, do we think they are a 2-6 team on the road? Since Pete's been there, they've been a 500 team. So I want to watch them, how they play on the road, and I believe that will dictate what their future is, coach.
And Chris makes a very important point. Even though Chris that Pete says we want to run the ball, will you commit to running the ball when it's not very effective early? And that's sometimes hard to do. You gain 2, you gain 1, you gain 0, you gain 4.
Hey, coach,
4.
You know I'm open, Doug Paul. You know I'm Brandon. Yeah. Don't forget about Brandon Marshall.
Yeah,
you know
Brandon Marshall. Yeah. All yeah. The guys are chirping and chirping. But you have to show teams that you are willing to do that, even though it may not be great initially. You'll get better at it, and they have to account for it. Once they you say something and then you don't commit to it, everybody's like, all right, we don't have to deal with that.
The other thing, too, they're trying to change is they're trying to change culturally. Pete is trying to get the locker room back. So Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner will be the leaders. So even the sound bites coming from these guys will be very, very corporate. It will not be Marshawn Lynch anymore. It will not be Richard Sherman anymore. So watch the running game. Will they stick to that philosophy as far as how they're going to change? And watch that locker room. Watch how are there guys trying to be outspoken when Pete was trying to recapture that rare atmosphere that he had a number of years ago when he started that program?
So, Nick, take a look at this team. You have a short up offensive line for the most part, a tight end who's going to help you block. You have a locker room that's trying to all sort of come together and not be so separate on everything. Is that enough to turn a 9-7 team into a playoff team?
Here's maybe in the AFC it would be, maybe other years. Here's my problem. When I'm doing math on any NFC team that's in the NFC East or the NFC West, and Coach, you're going to love this.
Nick, preseason math, a pencil.
Okay, I just look at the NFC North, and I think the Vikings and Packers are both playoff teams. I think they're both really good. And I look at the NFC South, and you got three teams that are potentially really good, and Saints, Falcons, and Panthers. So one of those teams, by the way, at minimum, isn't making it. So that means, in my eyes, the East and the West, those are one playoff team divisions. You got to win your division to get there. Like, if the Vikings and Packers are going, and if two of the three teams from the South, I think, should go, then you got to win your division. So if we're talking about Dallas or the Giants,
yes,
can you beat Philly? Can you win that division? If we're talking about the Seahawks, can you be better than the Rams? And again, I know there's going to be a team that we thought was going to stink. That's great. I get that.
That's why we love this team.
Right. But somebody had a very interesting point about that just yesterday. In the NBA, you go into a season this year, last year, maybe three teams can win it. Baseball, we feel like maybe five teams can win it. Right now in football, you feel like, what, half the league? 18 teams? Like, you really don't know. So I know I'm going to look back on this, and one of those teams I listed is going to end up stinking, or Aaron Rodgers.
Probably multiple teams you listed.
Okay, possibly.
Because usually every year
Every year there's at least four new playoff teams and eight returning, and most years it's five or six new ones. I get it. But when we're doing preseason, I'm looking at the rosters in the NFC, I just say, man, the South is stacked. The Packers, every year Aaron Rodgers has ever been healthy, they make it, and the Vikings aren't going to get worse. So where do the playoff teams come from? Go win your division. That's a tough division to win, man.
As Coach said, as long as they got Pete Carroll there, as long as they got Russell there, they will be fighting for a chance to win. And also John Schneider, general manager. There's no one better in the business. So looking forward to Seattle making a resurgence.
All right. Coach, stick around. Coming up on the other side, what does Tom Brady's feud with the media say about his relationship with Bill Belichick? That's next on First Things First. College football is back, Chris Carter, Saturday on Fox. Catch a full day's action as Lane Kiffin's Florida Atlantic faces the 7th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners.
Exciting football. Watch FAU, Lane Kiffin versus Oklahoma. Oklahoma's got Murray, the little baseball player dude, got $4 million in his pocket. Also watch Nebraska. They got a true freshman.
All starts at 11:30 Eastern on Fox, or stream it on the Fox Sports app.
Get some.
Nebraska got a new head coach. That coach has done great with quarterbacks everywhere he's ever been, Scott Frost.
Yes.
Get some. Back here on First Things First with Coach Mangini. All right, let's talk a little Tom Brady. Much of the rumored headbutting with Bill Belichick stems from the treatment of Brady's somewhat controversial trainer, Alex Guerrero. So when Guerrero flew on the Patriots team plane to the Week 3 preseason game, it left some wondering if they were now one big happy family again. Remember, Guerrero did not travel on the plane last season. Brady was asked about his relationship with Guerrero during his weekly radio interview with Boston radio station WEEI. Let's just say that it didn't go very well.
So what changed in him not being on the team plane last year and this year? Was that just communication back and forth, or was that an understanding of other things? What led to that being able to happen this year?
You know, I'm not getting into all that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, when I ran into him at the Super Bowl last year in Minneapolis, I remember talking to you about it at the time. When I talked to him there, he had said in his opinion that all this stuff had been overblown, that he and Belichick actually had a pretty good relationship even then. Would you say that was true?
I said I don't want to get into it.
Okay. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows it's well documented how, you know, the work that he and I do together.
No, I know. I understand that. I'm just trying to figure out, because I saw the reports this weekend that he's traveling with the team. Was he on the sideline on Friday?
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a great day. I'll talk to you later.
You see the face coach is making? That means there's wit stirring inside. There's something witty that's going to come out. What was your reaction, Coach?
There's a lot of buildup there to be witty. Now.
Yeah. That's
nothing there. Yeah, yeah. My apologies.
Totally, yeah.
Here's
my feeling on it. He said once, I don't want to talk about it. And then he said again, I don't want to talk about it. And then the guy asked the third question. It's what part of I don't want to talk about it is hard to understand. And some people say, well, this is a paid appearance. Well, guess what? I'm sure Tom's doing this because of some relationship that he has, not because he needs the money. So if they want to do this to him, I'm sure that whoever asked those questions or whatever time slot that was, that's probably going to change.
So let's talk about the issue here. It's not necessarily his relationship with the radio station, which clearly they pushed a little too far and they saw what happened. He hung up the phone. Should we read into it that things got better between Guerrero and the rest of the Patriots organization? Should we assume that because he's
back
riding
on the team playing
that perhaps things are okay? We saw this is the you know, sort of was the breaking point last year, seemingly, between Brady and Belichick.
Well, Coach Mangini's conflicted because Coach Mangini, without talking to him, is like, how did you know that the relationship was bad?
And
how do you know that he didn't take himself off of the team playing? And we do know for a fact that anyone that was on the Patriots sideline in that New Orleans game, it was approved by Bill Belichick and the staff for them to be there. Now, trying to fill in the gaps in New England, we believe to be impossible.
And looking at the team playing or games in the preseason, it's kind of like projecting performances out of the preseason. Sometimes you may have family go on the preseason planes. You may have extra sponsors go on the preseason planes. There's a lot of different things there. Now, whether he'll be on the sideline or on the team plane during the season, who knows? And who knows what the conversations have been in terms of the relationship or the expectation or any of that. What we do know is Tom doesn't want to talk about it. He wants to talk about the season. And Bill's not going to talk about it. No one's going to talk about it. And I doubt very much that things have dramatically changed one way or the other.
I mean, so you're right, C. There are things we don't know, but there are things we do know. We do know that Guerrero used to have an office in the building and doesn't anymore. We do know, unless all of the reporting has been wrong, that Belichick has not been a fan of the more players that have gone and worked with Guerrero.
Most NFL coaches are not a fan of you seeing personnel outside the staff that they're paying an exorbitant amount of money for. So this is not a Bill Belichick. The coaches I've been involved with, even I'm sure that Mike Tomlin right now, because Antonio has a guy that used to work for me. The guy's credible. He's a great trainer. But he can't be on Pittsburgh staff. I know Antonio wishes he could be. But he's not. So we're not talking about Mike Tomlin not letting Antonio's trainer fly with the team and everything. And it's almost the same situation.
So I'm glad you brought up Antonio's trainer, because I actually wrote in my notes I wanted to ask you about this. When it comes to Guerrero, one of the things that I find interesting is Brady is arguably the greatest quarterback, maybe the greatest football player ever. He swears by this guy. Why aren't, like, you swore by your trainer. So other great wide receivers went and said, I want to use Chris Carter's trainer. And maybe you got him from someone else. I'm not sure the history there. Why do you think more players, especially aging players, haven't gone to Alex Guerrero? Like, why? The only guys I know of that have ever worked with him are Brady's buddies. Like, Tom Brady, like, so Gronk's done it. Edelman's
done
it.
Dante Hightower did it.
Guys that played with the Patriots.
Yeah, like, two of those three guys had season-ending surgeries, got hurt.
Right. correct. So, like, that's why there is intrigue surrounding this trainer. It's not just because he has questionable practices and about water and concussions and cancer treatments and things like that. It's not just because he's
been on. Yes, he has an extensive stretching regimen that is more stretching pliable muscles compared to lifting and the way football players have been built. So there is definitely a difference in belief system of how NFL trainers and fitness gurus, how they would produce NFL players.
And so for you, Coach, to Chris's point about the frustration from a team, is that how you felt when you were running teams, that you didn't like when guys were getting there, when they had outside of the facility consultation or working with or a personal trainer, or did it not bother you?
Well, I tried to strike a balance. So if there was someone that someone really believed in, we would want that person to come in and meet with our trainer, meet with our strength coach. Maybe he has some really good ideas.
Yes.
Maybe there's some things that we can incorporate into our system. And it wasn't a function of you hated that they were going to someone else or you wanted to completely isolate them from outside interaction. That wasn't it. It was you wanted to make sure that the medical and the treatment and the training phases were all coordinated so you understood exactly what the player was going through. Now, what you do get from some of these outside guys, we had a chiropractor one time who wanted to diagnose some guy with a liver issue, and it's like, whoa, stay in your lane, okay? Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you get that outside, you get some of those outside influences, it creates problems that really aren't problems that then you have to
address. These teams,
address.
They have these multi-million dollar facilities. And what they try to do for a professional athlete, from the time you arrive until the time you leave, they want that to be a desirable location. So anything that we can do for you as an organization to help your job be so you don't have to get in your car. So having all these different things, chiropractic, anything else, a doctor,
masseuse,
a family practitioner, masseuse, all that. If you can get all that done at the facility, you make the athlete better because you take more advantage of his overall time compared to having him stop at two or three different guys after he's left a grueling day at the facility.
Coach, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, was Odell's big payday ever in doubt? That's next. This is First Things First. The Giants, our big story this morning, have made Odell Beckham Jr. the highest paid wide receiver in NFL history. 5 years, $95 million, bringing his guaranteed money to $65 million. The free-spirited, somewhat unpredictable Odell has had a quiet preseason, one that seemed to earn him the extension he was looking for. Check him out celebrating with his teammates shortly after the contract was finalized. He was a happy guy. CeCe, was there ever any real doubt that OBJ and the Giants would come together and get a deal like this done before the season started?
I mean, there was some doubt because the Giants had said initially that they wanted to sign him. But I do know this, that it was on the board, and Pat Shurmur alluded to this in the article yesterday. He's glad they didn't trade him. So they must have discussed trading him. I know other NFL teams have hired people, private investigators, to look into OBJ in case they were going to acquire him. So, no, he was going to get paid. It was just a matter of where he was going to get paid. And I thought that if he did the right things, the New York Football Giants, they don't let superstar players go. He's perfect for New York City. He's perfect for the Giants. So I'm glad that they were able to come to terms. I thought that he would always be a New York Football Giant.
I mean, look at these highlights we're playing. Here, the touchdown catch that we just showed against the Eagles is as good of a play as a wide receiver can make in this league. It was great coverage. Pass was fine. And he just goes up and, to use Chris's term, apprehends the football, manages to keep control, get both feet down. Every process of every catch is made. And like, here's the story. And a lot of, this is one of the things, I mean, this play right here is just, I mean, it's insane. Here's the story. And some people don't like this. This doesn't bother me at all. But when you're this good, you don't always have to run by the same rules as everyone else. Odell gave the Giants a lot of exit ramps as far as not paying him. They gave them a lot of exit ramps as far as, you know what, you're under contract, we can franchise you once, we can franchise you again. But when you're this talented and this productive in a performance-based industry, you almost always get paid. Like, and Odell, all he had to do was post video, just the, I mean, really small stuff. I'm going to show up every day. I'm not going to have any other off-the-field incidents, and I'm going to say the right things. And that checked enough boxes so the Giants could do what they always wanted to do, which is pay their best player. Like, I know some people don't like the fact that he gets away with certain things or has in the past that other guys wouldn't. But he's better than most people. Like, now, Chris holds him to a different standard because Chris holds him to the standard of guys who are as good or better than him, how they also conducted themselves. And that's fair, and I get it. And it's based on things, conversations he and Chris have had. But as far as getting this deal, of course he gets this deal. No receiver in NFL history has been more productive through the first 50 games than this guy right here.
But now it comes down to Now that you got paid, which is the player that we're going to see out on the field? And see, you've said something all along, and it was something that was echoed in that article. Money doesn't change you. It amplifies who you are. We've come to know who Odell Beckham Jr. is. How do you think the contract, the fame, the limelight, all that that comes with this money now, how do you think that changes or amplifies who Odell is?
Oh, I think we're still going to have concerns. I think we're going to see a great football player. I believe he's stronger. I believe he's more explosive than any other point in his athletic career. So I think that we'll see the best version of him athletically, but will we see him get involved in things? Yeah. Will he get into another altercation on the field? Not as explosive as Josh Norman, but there will be some issues. I already have that baked in, so I don't change those expectations. I really disagree with Nick about the fact that just because a guy's better, you're going to allow him to break the rules. Like, that don't make no sense, not in a team sport. If he was playing golf, playing tennis, playing by himself, I'm like, okay. Like, I wouldn't mind that.
What do you mean break the rules?
Well, you said treat them different. So yes. Whatever the rules have been set, whatever they are, that being the law or the rules of a locker room, when you have a 53-man roster, you can't tell guys that, hey, man, I expect different things from you than I expect from you. It just doesn't go in the locker room.
See, you've told me, and I wish I remember the coach, I think it was Parcells.
Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson said that, yes, he on his first day meeting with the Miami Dolphins, he locked the door. There was a couple guys who were late. One of the guys, he cut them. One of the guys was another prominent player. He let the guy in, and he told the team, I wouldn't cut Dan Marino. Of course, that don't make sense. But the team knows that. But the team thinks that, for the most part, we are on equal footing. If I do the same thing as someone else, I'm going to be judged according to what the rules are, compared to, no, this guy over here, because he can catch a ball, throw a ball, shoot a basket, that the rules are different for him. It's hard to operate a team at a high level having those expectations.
Maybe my experience on this is wrong. As far long as I've been following team sports, the guys that produce the most get the biggest margin of error. Like, that is, like, there's a reason that LeBron gets to have his friend on the coaching staff and his buddies with courtside seats and other guys don't. There's a reason that certain guys are given special dispensation that other guys aren't.
And that don't make it right, Nick. All right, when you're trying to run a locker room and trying to win a championship, it's hard to do those things. You would like to think, the players would like to think, that we're all on equal footing. It's no different than a business. The people you pay the highest amount of money, you know that they have a different amount of rope than you. But you understand that we all start at the same time. We're all going to get here. We're all going to work hard. So that is hard when you are in a group setting or in a team, a company. Those things are hard unless you're consistent with them on a daily basis.
Which is why I do think it's critically important that one thing that you've been very adamant about, and I have as well, that Odell continues to be the hardest worker on the team, or, you know, as hard a worker as anyone else on the team. I think it's incredibly damaging if the guy who you give special dispensation to starts slacking off, starts showing up late, starts not giving his full effort. That can create a toxic situation. But that hasn't been the case with him. The case with him is he has been overly emotional. He's gotten himself into what I would consider one off-the-field incident as far as that video we saw this offseason. And that is a real, like, those types of things.
So you're saying if anyone else on the team, if that video had come out?
Not anyone else, but I'm saying if the...
What if it was Eli Manning?
Okay.
No, let's just say it's Eli Manning. Why can't we?
Sure. Well, I was going to go with the other way. I was going to go with the player that would have been cut for it. I was going to say, like, if it was Tavares King, well, I don't even know if he's still on the Giants, but, like, if it was their sixth wide receiver, yeah, I think he gets cut. If it's Eli, it's an even bigger deal because he's your quarterback. But we can't pick. We know that we hold quarterbacks to a different standard than we do other guys.
But there were people who said they didn't care about the video and stuff before. Mm-hmm. What I want to do with Odell, I want to talk about the football. I want more of the conversation and topics to be about football. If he has done that, he's done himself a favor, and he's taken the steps to mature. All right? We are not prescribing by Nick Wright's theory. You can do whatever you want to do just because you have talent. You know the reason why? Because as a leader, it's hard to tell the guys that you're leading. They treat me different, but I have expectations from you. So you can be more talented, they can change the rules for you. They did that for one great giant. His name is Lawrence Taylor. But that organization, they regret it. But you know what it takes away? It takes away your ability to lead the people and speak to them, because they know there's a double standard for you around here, and I don't have to listen to you because the rules don't apply to you the way they apply to me. So if you don't want to be a leader, create a locker room like that. But hold everyone to a certain standard and expect your highest achievers to achieve that standard. That's where you have the environment where you can win championships.
All right, we're going to leave it there, take a break. Coming up, let's talk some Steelers. Why is Big Ben trying to find Le'Veon Bell's replacement? That's next. Time for First Things First. All right, let's move on to the NFL, where Josh Gordon is closer to returning to the field. Gordon went through a team walkthrough yesterday, despite not being able to practice because of a tight hamstring. Browns head coach Hugh Jackson said that Gordon will not start the season opener against Pittsburgh, but he will play. CeCe, what are fair expectations for Josh Gordon in week one?
I don't think we can have any expectations right now. He's not practicing. He's got a bad hamstring. Now, he is a big, muscular guy. And when you're not practicing and you're in holdouts, he wasn't in one of those type right. situations. What we see is muscle, soft tissue. They get injured. This happens all the time, year after year. So I don't have any expectations for week number one. I'm going to wait till he's on the practice field. Once he gets back on the practice field, then I will try to make some reasonable expectations for a guy who's only played 10 games since 2014.
Right. I mean, what should be noted is this, though. In his last game played, week 17 of last year, now he didn't have the soft tissue injury, but he did have DeShone Kizer playing quarterback, which might be worse than a soft tissue injury. He had 115 yards receiving. This is a guy that, when healthy, even after long layoffs, we've seen him come in and instantly produce. So week one, I agree with you. I would temper expectations, and obviously the bigger concerns with him are his overall health and well-being. But if he's healthy on and off the field and gets to practice, he instantly becomes, I believe, once again, one of the better receivers in this league.
All right, let's move to the Kansas City Chiefs now. Eric Berry is trying to come back from a torn Achilles he suffered last season. Chiefs GM Brett Veach says Berry doesn't beat expectations. He destroys them. CeCe, what do you expect from Eric Berry this season?
Eric Berry, I've been knowing him since he was a young fella coming out of the University of Tennessee. We trained him, getting him ready for the combine. The reason why he was a top 10 pick like that, because he ran a blazing 4.3. He's a workout warrior. Even when he went through cancer, which gives me the confidence, he would be on the field working out. A lot of his hair had fallen out. He didn't care. One time he was training so hard, he just began to cry. So I have a great love and appreciation for him and what he's done with his life. And what I've seen him overcome, I expect him to be able to overcome this tremendous obstacle being an Achilles injury. In close to 30 years old, it's a tough injury in football.
I'm hopelessly biased when it comes to this player. I haven't known him as long as Chris has, but I know him very well as well. I know his family. I know his brothers. I know his mom and dad. He comes from not only a great family, he is such a good person. And one of the reasons that, aside from my bias, I think he can overcome it is before he overcame cancer to become a first-team All-Pro again, he blew out his knee and became a first-team All-Pro. So, like, if there's anyone who knows how not to deal with an Achilles, but to deal with time off from football, stay in shape, and be able to get right back to that level, it's this guy right here, and the Chiefs desperately need him on that defense.
And kudos to the Chiefs for being so good about
everything,
making
with
sure there's always a spot there. And some drama in Pittsburgh now. Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger came out yesterday and said that James Conner is for sure Le'Veon Bell's long-term replacement. For sure. Strange timing, as Al Bell is still absent from training camp. CeCe, is Big Ben out of line here?
Well, did I miss the news flash that Kevin Colbert was fired as the general manager, the one that's picked all these great players? Because Pittsburgh has not participated in free agency the way other teams have done. They've been a lot like Green Bay. They say they like their talent to be grown organically. So, and they have developed it, and they have done this very well. But for a player, if I was Le'Veon Bell, I would be upset. Because I'm trying to get my money. I'm trying to get a long-term contract. And you are making a suggestion that I'm not going to be there long-term? Well, did somebody tell you something that they didn't tell me? Because I know Le'Veon Bell still thinks that a long-term contract can potentially be worked out in Pittsburgh. Now, the percentages aren't in his favor, but to have your franchise quarterback, two-time Super Bowl champion, to say that they already have my replacement, oh, I would be having some communications with Ben Roethlisberger, and I would be doing that immediately. I wouldn't be waiting for Mike Tomlin to try to get us together. No. I would be talking to him because we have a – man, don't misrepresent me. And don't never misrepresent one of your teammates. If you don't have something good to say about your teammates, he could have made a compliment about L. Bell and Connor in the same stroke. He didn't have to do this.
Yeah, he could have easily said, and when Le'Veon gets back, we're going to have the best 1-2 punch at running back in the league.
He could have said a dozen other things.
People also should know this. When L. Bell came out of Michigan State, he was, I believe, the single youngest player in his draft class. He was certainly on the very short list. He's 26 years old. We don't think that because he's going into year six, but he's 26 years old. He's not nearing the end. Like, even by running back standards, he's not incredibly old. He just has a lot of tread on the tires. He's had a lot of carries throughout his career. I don't understand why you'd say this. It is for Big Ben, but this is one of his issues, right? Is he says things that we don't expect a franchise quarterback to say that can draw negative attention to the team. There are so many ways to compliment Connor without saying, oh, yeah, he's going to take over for L. Bell.
He's frustrated by his holdout.
Oh, miss me with that.
I
don't mean you, Jenna Wolf.
No,
I'm saying
I know,
if that's the case.
That's clearly what it must be.
Well, okay.
No. I wouldn't put that on Ben. I wouldn't put that on. Part of football is getting the franchise tag. I wouldn't, because Ben has said, I wouldn't think he's upset because Ben has said dumb stuff before. Okay? So I just wouldn't put that on him. He's not upset. He wished he was signed to a long-term contract. And Connor probably is good. And he might be the replacement. It's just not right for you to say it.
And it should be noted, just to be fair to L. Bell, technically he's not holding out. He doesn't have a contract. He hasn't signed his franchise tag yet. So now the Steelers at any moment could rescind it, and he'd be an unrestricted free agent, and maybe he'd be out of luck as far as getting $15 million this year to play running back. But he also could get that long-term deal. Like, L. Bell is doing exactly what he said he was going to do, exactly what he did last year, and
when you have the franchise tag, that's the only thing you can do. You can't sign the franchise tag and come the first day of training camp. Have we seen how many guys have gotten hurt?
Right.
And out for the regular season? That's the only reason why he's not at training camp is because the injury, and it does not make sense because you don't have the long guarantees.
And Big Ben knows that. Even if he's no capologist, he knows that. There's so many ways to say this without essentially putting an expiration date on Le'Veon Bell's time with the Steelers. There's no reason to do that. No reason to say that.
Let's move on to some basketball. I haven't talked NBA in a while. Manu Ginobili, the 41-year-old, called it quits after 16 years with the Spurs. His illustrious career included four titles, two All-Star games, and a gold medal back in 2004. This draws an end to an era in San Antonio with longtime teammates Tim Duncan and Tony Parker leaving recently as well. Nick, how will you remember Manu's career?
One of the greatest sixth men ever. The best player on the most important gold medal that's ever been won in Olympic basketball, Argentina's win in 2004, because of how shocking it was, how important it was for the global growth of the game, and a key cog on a modern-day NBA dynasty, even though they never won back-to-back titles. Like, this is a guy who was an MVP in Italy, who was a EuroLeague Finals MVP, then came over to the NBA and was awesome for the better part of a decade and a half, and even up to and including a couple years ago when he sealed a shocking playoff win with a block on James Harden, still was able to channel great championship moments in the biggest spots. Like, he's never going to have the statistical profile of other guys because he was a sixth man, because he didn't get big minutes. But his per 36 minutes are elite, his playoff numbers are elite, and to a man, what teammates say about him is nothing but complimentary terms about how important he was to a team that they won four titles while he was there.
Is he a Hall of Famer, CeCe?
I don't know that. I don't know that. I'm going to stay out of that debate. I'm going to let other people discuss, is he a Hall of Famer? Because it's really hard when you're not a starter to be a Hall of Famer. You'd have to be in a special category. Nick said he's the best sixth man ever. What he was that a player who had starter ability, and because his overall mental toughness, and because he was a great teammate, he had the characteristics that come with being a Hall of Famer. I'm willing to sacrifice. I could have greater numbers. Now, even in having greater numbers, I don't think he would have had the length of his career. So for me, Mono is very, very fortunate that when he was drafted and where he went and the type of culture that was in San Antonio, he was a perfect San Antonio player. Is he a Hall of Fame? Does he have Hall of Fame mention if he's not in San Antonio? I don't think so. Because the culture that was created there, not only that a sixth man can be treated like a starter, but also the international culture that they created there that could cultivate where he could be comfortable because there was multiple international players. And what they did for the players on and off the court, that's a credit to San Diego. I mean, to San Antonio. So it is about a guy that in this system, he was able to flourish, but his overall mentality, where he had starter ability, but he was saying, you know something, I'm going to do what's best for the team and make it a career. That's the thing about Mono I probably respect the most.
All right, so real quick, two things to put a button on it. One is, as far as the Hall of Fame, if it were only about your NBA career, then it becomes debatable. Because it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame, not only will he be a Hall of Famer, he might be first ballot, because what he did in the Olympics counts. What he did in EuroLeague in Italy counts. It's all part of it. And the other thing is, if people just want to, because we said his stats were not Hall of Fame caliber, it should be noted that as far as in the playoffs, 3,000 points, 800 assists and rebounds, 250 steals, here's the full list. LeBron, Michael, Kobe, Scottie, Wade, Larry Bird, Manu Ginobili. His per 36 minutes, 15-5-5 with at least 55% shooting. Oscar, Jerry, Magic, LeBron, Bird, James Harden, and Manu. His impact on the court per minute and his playoff numbers, those, when you really dive into them, they are extraordinary to go along with the four rings.
And those who would argue would be that if he was playing 35 minutes, would he have been able to have that same productivity?
No doubt about it. Those per 36 stats can be misleading because your efficiency can dip
right
if you're not playing with full energy that you have early on. That's a totally fair critique.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, could Dez Bryant be joining Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in New England?
Sure.
That's next on First
I think he's
going
to be on First Things First, FS1, somewhere first week.
Welcome back to First Things First. Former head coach Eric Mangini back with us this morning. Always fun when you're here, Coach.
Thanks.
Go on.
There you go.
There you go.
Coach. I was going to hold it back.
These two weirdos. We actually have a good time.
Am I getting
too,
grouped in?
When you're actually not here. When you're stuck in the airport, we actually have a good time then, too.
No, that, I got hurt feeling. No.
Yeah. Better, I thought it only better time when he's here.
Look at
better
you.
Time.
Yeah,
hey.
He's broken.
9 days until the start of the season, and wide receiver Dez Bryant, much like the four of us, not on an NFL roster. Some would argue that the team most in need of a wide receiver on their roster is New England. When asked about that, you know, before Tom Brady hung up the phone during his interview with WEEI, Brady said that Dez is obviously a hell of a player, but he said, quote, I don't go in there and tell them who I want. All right, Coach, you got a player, a wide receiver that needs a team. There's a team that needs a wide receiver. How would Dez fit in on the Patriots?
I don't think this would be a fit. Just the little bit that I do know about Dez and seeing him with his interview process in Cleveland, if you're going to New England, you're not going to be on the marquee. You've got to go in, you've got to be ready to play a role, and you've got to be ready to do whatever they ask you to do. And I don't know if Dez is in that space yet. And also at this point, to go and sign a veteran receiver before the start of the season and be committed to their contract, to have to pay out that contract no matter what, just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense for New England. Now, I could see them revisiting it after the first week of the season when those contracts aren't guaranteed. Then it's really renting.
It's week to week, and there's no risk associated with it whatsoever. They brought in Kenny Britt late in the year. He was a guy a lot of us thought wouldn't necessarily fit.
Right. And he's a version of Dez Bryant.
I would say less talented with a little less baggage on the sidelines. Now, he might have some more baggage off the field than Dez, but less baggage on the sidelines, but also less high-level ability. He had 5 catches in like a half dozen games for them last year and then was cut recently this offseason. So he didn't fit. Dez had an interesting tweet yesterday about he was asked basically how much he still has left, and he says, I gave too much love and not received at least half back. I will play ball this year, just might be a little bit later in the year, we'll see. So he seems at least now coming to the realization that he might have missed his opportunity to be on a week one roster and therefore have his salary for the year guaranteed.
That's either the second or third time he has kind of led me to believe on Twitter that he's been injured or that he, in trying to train, something he realized that something that he may be injured in the past is not up to full speed. That's the only thing I can take from some of his
messages. He also tweeted, I have to take care of me first. Now, you could think that like as a holistic emotional or to your point, like literally take care of myself first.
Yeah, and you're a lot smarter than me, too, if you can interpret all these things that Dez is saying. But, Coach, I'd like to do just a little bit of role playing because I've been a wide receiver before. And you've been around Belichick before. Well, I'm a little more dressed than Dez would have been in the meeting.
A little more?
But from what we saw in the Cleveland, when he met with the coach and the general manager, his first comments about, because Bill would ask him something about what are you trying to accomplish in, or something like that. Would you agree? Or what would Bill's first question?
Yeah, you be Belichick.
First of all, I don't think he's getting to the building. Like, I don't think he's getting.
Yeah, neither are we, but can we play?
But if he was in the building, I would imagine you could get a very similar question. What are you looking for from this season? And also, what value do you bring? What perceived value do you bring to the organization?
Coach, I'm ready to play ball and everything, but I just want to be in a situation, Coach, where someone is just real with me. I'm to the point now where people have been lying to me. I'm just ready for it. Just have honest and just be real with me, Coach.
Okay, so it'd be a long pause. A very long pause. And I don't think Bill would address that directly. I think it'd be more, here's what the expectations are. Here's the role that you need to play. Here's the way you need to play that role. And that's as real as I can get with you. Now, do you really want to be here and do those things, or do you need more love? Because if you're looking for love, it's not coming from here.
No, Coach, it's been real. Nice to meet you.
What are those expectations? So even if we say Dez isn't a fit in New England, what are the expectations for a wide receiver to come play in New England?
It's not about a wide receiver. It's not about
a
running back. Yes, it's about you fitting into the bigger picture. A business approach and understanding that the we is greater than me. And you need to contribute to the greater good first. And if you do that, everybody's boat is going to rise. It's going to be good for you. But if you come in with a mentality like, I need to get my sacks, I need to get my catches, I need to get this, that doesn't work there. It just doesn't work.
At this stage of my career, Bill, I'll play any position. I believe you to be the greatest football coach ever. If you can help make me better, I'm going to show up to work, and I'm going to try to get better every day. I believe that you know what's best for me and what's best for the Patriots. I'm just trying to get a job. That's what I just want an opportunity to play for you and to play for this organization.
I remember when Rodney Harrison signed. Rodney showed up at the building.
With a lot of stuff that you would say, there's no way Rodney Harrison is going to play for Bill Belichick.
And we had Lawyer Malloy. So he shows up, and he wasn't dressed up. He was in, you know, kind of
workout gear
and with his agent, and Bill was in the same. And they just talked about, here's what the opportunity is. Here's what the money is. And Rodney liked the idea, like he could go have a chance to win. It was very straight out business. Here's our expectations. Here's what the offer is. Here's the competition ahead of you. Do you want it?
Rodney ended up being one of his favorite players.
And Rodney, when I talked to him, I said, well, you know, you didn't go through the recruiting process. You didn't, you know, a lot of teams, there's a lot of recruiting going. He said, I didn't want that. I wanted to know what the opportunity was, what the expectation was, what the competition was, what the compensation was. And we were ready to go.
Well, unless Dez Bryant has done a 180, that was not Dez Bryant, the Dez Bryant we saw talking to Dorsey and Hugh Jackson last week in Cleveland. It was a lot of, here, I know what I can do. I know what I'm good at. Clearly, what we didn't see behind those scenes is, you know, I want to be paid more than $5 million because it was reported that they offered $5 million and he wanted more than that. But my question to you is, would it appear at this point with 9 days to go that most teams are now going to take the same approach that the Patriots could potentially take, which is, I'm not going to guarantee you for the year. Let's wait and see after the season starts. Is that where we're at this point?
we're getting closer to that. Going into this last preseason game, a lot of starters aren't going to play.
Right, where's the
injury? So you're probably not going to have those injuries. Now, that doesn't mean someone couldn't get hurt in practice or something couldn't happen leading up to it. It's just now where you're making those decisions, you're going to see a lot of veterans get cut, too, before the start of the season because you don't want to have to own that contract for the 17 weeks.
Has Jacksonville called him yet? Because they had the injury. They think they can contend. They have the need at the position. They got the cap space. They ain't called. Like, let me ask you this as a player, see, because you were a learned football player. It was one of your biggest strengths. How hard would it have been for you to be ready to play week one in a new offense, new coordinator, new quarterback, new system if you were picked up 9 days before the season?
Impossible.
Okay.
Impossible. When I retired, the Dolphins signed me. We had a bye week, and I had to get ready within a two-week period to play the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football. And I was on that field, but I was not ready to be playing in an NFL game. First pass came through me, went right through my hands, and the guy hit me with a knife on my kidney. And I knew.
Lacerated your kidney.
Yeah, I knew that, man, Chris, you didn't talk yourself into a fight with a butter knife, and they got multiple weapons.
I bet mentally, though, you picked up the information and you were ready from the – or not – maybe it wasn't perfect.
One of the things
sure
I had North Turner. And North Turner had a handful of things. The first day I came there, he said, I think that – this is what I did with Mike Irvin. I think I can duplicate this with you. So they had a game plan, and that helped me mentally get myself, even though I didn't think physically I was ready for that type of challenge.
And, Chris, so here's a guy who picks up information quickly, has a wealth of experience. So now if you're dealing with a situation where guys maybe don't pick up information as quickly, everything gets that much. It's not only physically, but it's mentally, and you've got a lot of things you got to overcome.
Getting to is that even if you are a student of the game, have always been able to run all the routes, you went from the outside to the slot, played all the positions. It's still just from a – forget the physicality and the lacerated kidney, even though I'm sure that's hard to forget. Like, just from a what you need to do on a play-and-play basis, what the calls are, is difficult to pick up in a week and a half.
It's impossible to play fast.
There you go. And so if you're a player who your strengths have not been, let me call it mental agility, then I think it's doubly difficult. One last point about Rodney Harrison.
Okay.
There's a reason Rodney Harrison's on Sunday Night Football, wearing that awesome watch he wears. It's not just because he's a great player. It's because he got the winning with New England. Like, there is an added benefit of being that caliber of player in that organization, of being able to carry that glow with you. And that's something that I wonder if Dez, and not just to pick on Dez, but some other guys recognize, is there is some sacrifice. But your profile, rising tide raises all boats. Your profile during and post-career can raise enormously by playing in big games that people remember, that everybody saw. And so that's something that I think Dez is missing out on enormously.
Rodney could have gotten paid more. Rodney could have gone to a place where he was guaranteed a spot as the starter. Rodney chose to go there and compete.
He chose the toughest spot.
He chose the toughest spot. And as an organization, as a coaching staff, you're like, all right, that's the type of guy that I want.
And that's how he resurrected his career. Right. He was on a down tilt.
And just one more point on Dez is, even though Chris may not have been ready, if your organization is facing a situation where a slow Chris Carter is much better than whoever you have next, then you go get that guy. And it may not be perfect, but
right,
that's to where Dez could get an opportunity, is if he's the best alternative.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up, how do expectations change now that Odell Beckham Jr. got paid? Next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Coach Mangini. Our big story this morning, the big payday for Odell Beckham Jr., the one that now makes the very spirited New York Giant the highest paid wide receiver in the history of the NFL. The Giants announced a 5-year deal worth up to $95 million. Odell now has $65 million guaranteed. How did he celebrate? With his teammates shortly after the contract was finalized, with no shirt and no shoes, just the way he wanted it. Coach, Odell played this right, quiet preseason, showing up to everything that he was asked to show up to. What are expectations now for this wide receiver on this team?
Well, I would imagine they're looking for him to be the same guy that he has been in terms of the way he's operated at practice, the way he's operated in the classroom, ideally the production that he's had in terms of receptions and touchdowns. He doesn't need to be anything besides what he's been on the field from a production standpoint. And sometimes guys who sign big contracts try to do more than they should. And I think Odell handled this as well as you could have handled it. He could have easily gone the Khalil Mack way and tried to butt heads with everybody, and he'd be in the same situation. But he went in with a new head coach, a new GM, showed that he wanted to be part of the program, wanted to be part of the system, was going to work hard, was over his injury, and got rewarded for it. Now, to whom much is given, much is expected, and where much is expected from Odell is in terms of the off-the-field issues, is in terms of making the right decisions on the field, not getting personal foul penalties or unnecessary penalties. They don't need any of that, and it doesn't help anybody.
And it should be noted that in his career, the Josh Norman thing was awful. We all know that. It was bad for Tom Coughlin. It was in the article, the great piece Seth Wickersham wrote, it said in there that an NFL executive called the officials during the game and said, you need to eject these players. It was ugly to see.
NFL office wanted them thrown out the game.
During the game, tried to impact it. So that in that one game, he got three personal fouls. The rest of his career combined were at three total penalties that are either unnecessary celebration, unnecessary roughness. So he's not a highly penalized player. It is the stuff of how hard is it for the other 52 guys to do their job if he's flipping out on the sideline, if he's doing the kicking net, good or bad kicking net. If we've seen him, and you don't see this often in NFL sidelines, we saw him cry at the end of a game once, or at least appear
to cry. Odd touchdown celebrations.
That was one of the penalties. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so those are obviously things that teams don't want, and that while they will tolerate if you're good enough, to the point, Chris and I butted heads earlier about, listen, there's always been different rules for the highest performers. I think what is most noteworthy is there are also different rules in the other direction for the highest paid guys. Like, it's one thing to be the young player on his rookie deal who's all of a sudden superstar. It's another thing when what you've said, which is you speak to your team multiple ways. One of them is who you pay. And now part of Odell's deal with them is, I would imagine, he should be an even better version of himself than he's been non-football-wise, because they have rewarded him with the best way a team can reward you, make you the highest paid in the history of the league at what you do.
I think that this could go either way. And it could go either way in a really bad way, because there's nothing the team can do anymore. Once you give that type of money and that type of guaranteed money to a player, what are they going to do, fine them? So the fines are so insignificant compared to his income that he can pretty much operate any way that he wants to operate. Because then the second alternative is you bench him. Well, now you're benching your highest paid player. You hurt the whole team. So however he decides to act, the team really doesn't have much hand anymore. And they put a lot of faith that he's going to act the way that he's shown, as opposed to some of the things that he's historically done.
Yeah, Coach, my expectations haven't changed with the contract. My expectations are based on what the players communicated that he wants to accomplish. And if he wants to accomplish those things, then being a good teammate, it shouldn't be that difficult. Realizing that everything applies to you just like the other players, and how can I make my team better? And that's offense, defense, and special teams. If you get penalized after a touchdown celebration, you don't help the kicker. You don't help the defense. It's a very, very selfish act. And as we see his career, I guarantee he wants to grow out of those things. So it's not some type of mandate that I have. These are all the things that the player has communicated. And all these other players that we have seen signed, I think there's at least 10 guys making $14 million from a wide receiver standpoint. No, we had none of these other conversations. When Julio Jones got his new contract, we were like, hey, man, what's the expectations for Julio? None, because we didn't expect Julio to change. A couple years later, Antonio Brown, he got a new contract. Oh, man, do we expect Antonio to change? No, not too much. Haven't had too many conversations.
Change in a negative way because of
Do we expect that the money and our expectations, do we have different expectations now? No, we didn't have those conversations. Or the five or six other guys we saw get paid this offseason, $16 million. We didn't have those conversations because those issues were not present with the players. With Odell, It is there. It is on the board that we will be talking about him in some type of infraction just as much as we'll be talking about him making some type of spectacular catch. I just prefer to talk about what he's doing on the football field because that's what they're paying him the money for.
But I guess my question then to both of you would be, is it possible the reason we talk about the off-the-field stuff is just because we have misaligned what's important? Because the team that knows him the best has enough faith in him to give him this deal. The on-the-field production, I listed it. He's first or second through this point of his career in basically every category for a receiver, except for touchdowns, where he's fifth. Like, so if the team believes in him, if Eli, aside from, I think, one interview a couple years ago, has said nothing but good things about him, if everyone says his work ethic is unimpeachable, then is it maybe that we're talking about the off-the-field stuff because it's glitzy and it's glamorous, no. And he... Go ahead, Jenna.
You read the same article that a lot of us did. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in there that...
There's no other player in the league like him. It's not like we just made this up. Like, he is that way. Oh. He's created this image, Nick.
Oh, I'm not...
I got better things to talk about.
No, I'm not denying that he's created the image. Go ahead, Jenna.
I just want to say, his attitude is based a lot on how he plays and things that are said about him. And he wants to have his foot in that Hollywood lifestyle, but there's a lot that comes with having that fame, and he reacts to it. It's what we said. He lost his passion for the game. He lost his taste for football. Oh, and then he got it back, and then he was really, really high, and then he's crying on the sidelines. Like, all of that may be little insignificant things that don't actually affect what he's doing, but eventually it will. And what they're paying for is a guy who could still be himself within the confines of New York, which is the bright lights in the big city, but also be a leader and also be productive and also be the guy worthy of $95 million contract over 5 years, Coach.
When you're dealing with so many players and you're trying your best to go forward as one unit and you've got a player that's disruptive and however he is disruptive, it's hard. And you end up dealing with internal issues instead of focusing on your opponent. And that's counterproductive. And then when you empower that guy with a big contract, all the other players look at you and say, okay, well, obviously I can act like that because you paid him.
And Coach Mangini and I will definitely both agree that even being involved with the kicking net, it's a distraction on an NFL sideline. We've been on the NFL sidelines. We realize it's you against the world. You got 53 guys there. Typically, you got the crowd against you. Even when you're at home, you can't tell the guys, we're going to use the home crowd as an advantage. It's you and your teammates. And those things become distracting. And after time, guys get tired of seeing it because it doesn't make your teammates better. It is a very, very selfish act. And as he moves forward, these are the things that he's trying to remove. At least that's what he said.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.